You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
My name is Jean Legault, Science 82, former CFRC alumnus, jazz director from 1980 to 1982. I'm thrilled to be back on campus. I can't describe how important CFRC was to me, not only as a training ground, it helped me develop my confidence in public speaking, and as far as my love of music, was developed directly from this station. The wealth of records back then, we didn't even have CDs, and the people, the terrific volunteers that were here. I want to thank CFRC, and I'm really pleased, and I'm amazed at the technology that's here, and I'm wishing you all the best of success. This is Jean Legault for CFRC 101.9 FM.
Queen's Gaels are making the long trek to Windsor to battle the Lancers for a shot at the Yates Cup. These two teams last met on homecoming, where Windsor stole a victory on a last-second field goal. Can Queens avenge their homecoming loss, or will they suffer another agonizing semifinal stumble? Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM to find out. We go live at 12:45 with the Grad Club pregame show and the scheduled 1 p.m. kickoff.
Morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, October 31st, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, Wattleywear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. The ghosts of the SS Keewatin were busy last weekend. Nearly 200 visitors boarded the historic Edwardian steamship at the Great Lakes Museum for its first ever Halloween event, Lock and Key. The museum's visitor experience manager, Claire Notman, sat down with CFRC to recap the evening.
So the number of attendees absolutely exceeded our expectations. This is the very first Halloween event on the ship. It is our very first event on the ship, so you never know how that's going to go. You hope you've appealed to a wide range of people, but you never know how it's going to go. But we sold out our first four of six time slots before the event even started, so it was fantastic, the response.
Visitors took part in an interactive quest to recover the captain's lost key, hidden by mischievous Halloween spirits.
So, of course, the ship was very well decorated for Halloween. Spooky, not scary, but we've got some animatronics on there. And folks were able to book into a one-hour time slot starting at 3 o'clock and going until 8 o'clock. And their job was to solve puzzles to get to a final solution as to who or where the spirits of Halloween had hidden the key to the Keewatin.
Can you tell us where that key was? I'm curious.
Yeah, so people discovered that the key was hidden in the boiler.
Guests got into the spirit, exploring the ship's spookified interior.
Throughout the night, I was able to talk to people and listen to people's kind of discussions or, you know, as they were chatting with each other, solving the puzzles. And it was great. We had people who brought their toddlers. We had grandparents that brought their grandkids. We had groups of adults, and everybody seemed pretty satisfied with the level of difficulty. Some puzzles were a little bit more difficult than others, but everybody seemed to have a really great time. Lots of people in costume, which we love to see because that just, you know, it just enhances the whole event.
And the event didn't just thrill returning passengers. It brought a whole new crowd aboard.
I would say most of the people, so I want to say 80% of the people I spoke to, it was their first their first visit to the ship. And so what I love about that is that we've attracted kind of a new type of demographic, if you want to say that, like of people who maybe think, you know, well, what do I want to do getting on an old ship? Like, what's the big deal? But I love Halloween events, so I'm going to go to this Halloween event. So that makes me really excited for the different things that we can do to attract different people to the museum and the ship and get them really interested in the amazing heritage and history we have here in Kingston.
That success, Claire says, is already inspiring future programming.
This absolutely paves the way for more events on the ship, particularly Halloween, but also through our operating season in the spring and summer. And I have to mention that we are so grateful to the Government of Canada, who funded restoration of the SS Keewatin through FedDev Ontario. So without that kind of funding for restorations for the ship, we wouldn't be able to let as many people on or let people on at all. So we're really grateful for that funding.
So it seems the Keewatin may have found a new seasonal tradition. For those still looking to meet the spirits of the SS Keewatin, the Haunted Walk has announced new fall dates for their Ghosts of the SS Keewatin Tales from the Great Lakes tours. Tonight, pirates will be visiting Kingston's waterfront, but for a good cause. For one spooky evening, the St. Lawrence II, Kingston's own tall ship, will be transformed into a haunted pirate vessel at Portsmouth Olympic Harbor. Bridget Kai with Brigantine Incorporated sat down with CFRC to tell us about the event.
So basically, it's a family-friendly event. People can show up anytime between 5:30 and 8 o'clock. And it's a free admission tour of our traditionally rigged tall ship that has been transformed into a spooky pirate ship for the night. And so there'll be treats, there'll be some games, and most importantly, there'll be a spooky tour where we'll tell you a little bit about the ship and, of course, about our program that we run when we're not haunted.
That program is the focus of the night's fundraising, a long-running youth sailing initiative operated by Tall Ship Expeditions Canada.
We're a registered charity under the name of Brigantine Incorporated, and basically we run a summer camp aboard the tall ship St. Lawrence II. It's a 72-foot brigantine, and so a lot of people like to ask if the sails are real. Yes, they are real, and they bring us everywhere. So we've been to New York City, we've been to Halifax, Charlottetown, Quebec City. We go all over, and this is just an opportunity for people that we sail with, mostly our youth, to learn how to be independent, to be connected with nature, and to get to know the remote communities that we visit.
This year also marks a homecoming for the ship, built right here in Kingston more than 70 years ago.
The ship has been all over the place in the past few years. So it is the first time in 3 years that we're back in Kingston. The ship was actually built in Kingston shipyards 72 years ago. So we're very, very happy to be back. And one of the biggest benefits about being back is we get to connect with a lot of the local youth and the local families. So that's what we're hoping to do this year by being more local.
And while the ship may not truly be haunted, the crew is preparing to get the ship into the Halloween spirit.
I would say nothing that has been confirmed as haunted, no. But you definitely can hear everything at night. It's a pretty small boat. Sometimes you hear some pretty whack conversations from on deck when you're sleeping. So, I mean, that's kind of haunted, I guess.
To join in, visitors can simply head to Portsmouth Olympic Harbor, 53 Yonge Street, between 5:30 and 8 p.m. after registering at allevents.com.
So to get involved, you can register under allevents.com. You can find us under our organization name, Tall Ship Expeditions Canada, and you will find our event. Or you can just show up at Portsmouth Olympic Harbor, no like registration in advance required. And that's at 53 Yonge Street, by the water, of course. And that's all you need to show up to the event.
For anyone curious about setting sail beyond Halloween, Bridget says it's easy to get involved. And for many youth, the ship can become like a second home.
So like the first time you join, it's the summer camp. You'll join for maybe a week or two. You have to be 13 to 18 years old. And then if you like it, then you can continue on for an additional 4 summers as a crew member on board. And so there's even paid opportunities with that. And of course, room and board is provided, and an opportunity to get to know new people and travel all summer.
The St. Lawrence 2 spent the last few years voyaging east before returning home to Kingston for this season.
So basically, every 3 years we try to go out east. So we try to do a bit of like Nova Scotia and stuff like that. So that was scheduled. But then the program was thinking we'd be a bit more ambitious. So we went to Newfoundland and Labrador. So we spent a winter in Nova Scotia so that we could get to Newfoundland easily. And so that was the kind of 2.5 years away from home. And then we came back to Kingston so that we could do the Great Lakes Challenge. And that is a series of festivals that also happens every 3 years. And it's really, really big events hosted by cities all around the Great Lakes. There's boats from Canada, the US, even Europe. So it's a really big deal. And so that's why we decided to come back as well.
Once again, the St. Lawrence 2's Night of Haunted Pirate Tours set sail tonight on Friday, October 31st from 5:30 to 8 p.m., with all donations supporting youth access to Kingston's Tall Ship Program. Kingston is carving out a new place on Canada's clean tech map. The Reaction Hub officially opened its doors last week at 945 Princess Street. It's a first-of-its-kind center for green chemistry innovation. Developed in partnership with the City of Kingston and Modern Niagara, with a $3 million investment from the city to drive sustainable technology and economic growth. The hub brings together lab, pilot, and manufacturing spaces under one roof to help chemistry-based innovations make the leap from research to real-world production. I spoke with Morgan Letnin, Executive Director of the Reaction Hub, about what this means for Kingston and how the city's long chemistry legacy is continuing to evolve and lead the charge. Well, to start us off, I was wondering if you'd like to just introduce yourself for our listeners.
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Morgan Letnin, and I am the Executive Director of Reaction Hub, but prior to that was a BSc 2016 and PhD 2022 graduate from Queen's in the chemistry department, and absolutely loved my over a decade at the university, and I'm excited now to be running an organization here in Kingston that supports the scale-up and commercialization of sustainable chemistry-based technologies.
Awesome. And for those hearing about it for the first time, what is the Reaction Hub? What's happening here in Kingston?
Yeah, so Reaction Hub is said an enabler of the commercialization of chemistry technologies. So this organization came to be a couple years ago when the ecosystem of chemistry within the Kingston region came together. We have, you know, great researchers at Queen's, but also service providers or these kind of technical experts with Kingston Process Metallurgy and a few others. It all came together and said, we have this really long chemistry history in Kingston with DuPont setting up its global scale-up facility here in the 40s. And there's some, what else can we do to amplify that ability and really fill a gap within the commercialization of chemistry technologies? Because the challenges that we have to solve, from climate change to ensuring, you know, economic resilience, are all can be solved with new sustainable chemistry technologies. So myself and a business partner both were former chemistry entrepreneurs, and we joined forces with this group in the city of Kingston and some other partners to try and solve that challenge. So Reaction Hub, as I said, has a couple different ways that we support these scaling chemistry technologies and companies. One with a facility at sort of the center of town. It's in a building that's a little bit over 200,000 square feet. We have purpose-built lab piloting and scale-up facilities. You can bring a technology all the way from, you know, that past lab scale where it's been validated at a university, you now need to know what's next, all the way up to commercial scale. And then we do that in partnership and in with support from strategic services. So how do you, the who, what, where, and how much does it cost to get a technology to market? And then really helping these technologies understand how do they make the biggest impact.
Mm-hmm. And you dove right into this, but I was wondering if we could rewind a bit. Could you kind of describe what the valley of death is when we're talking about that jump from research to commercialization?
Yes, this is a the scary valley of death. So this really detrimental phase in the development of a chemical technology where getting outside of, you know, when you validate it, as we said, at the lab, and you go, okay, we've got something great here. We've invented something. It's got potential. There's a couple reasons why these types of technologies often die and they never actually make it to market. One, it's extremely expensive. So the equipment and the instruments and the facilities that you need change at every scale. And to get from that lab to, you know, something that's at hundreds of milliliters to hundreds of thousands of liters to millions of liters, the equipment that you need along the way is drastically different. So there's a cost component. There's also a time when you're inventing a new technology. That can take, you know, multiple PhD, you know, to take a professor's entire career potentially. And then there's also the next phase of getting it to market, which could take another 5 to 10 years. So the time is a challenge. And then the expertise. So at every stage, from the scientist to the engineer, but also the legal advice, the IP advice, the business knowledge, the finance knowledge, the how do you get investors? So all of these different pieces have to come together, and they're different at every phase. So this is where there's this valley of death that happens, where these technologies, no matter how much potential they have, sometimes just don't make it over the edge.
And how's the Reaction Hub kind of stepping in here and bridging that gap?
Yeah, so that was, it was truly, we said, how do we fill this, and how do we try and make the process of getting that technology through commercialization either more time effective, more cost effective, and, you know, try and take away some headaches along the way, because it's not easy. So one, with our infrastructure and the facilities that I mentioned, the way that we've designed the space is that it's in a flexible model. So think about it like co-working for science or co-working for chemical processes, where the equivalent at this time, normally a company has to go find a warehouse and spend hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars to make the electrical and the water and the gas and everything that you need to do a chemical process. They have to do that themselves. Or build a whole brand new building that can cost millions and millions of dollars. So instead, you can come to us and access the space for a flexible amount of time. And then that allows you, when you complete, you know, your goal, you get to the next stage, we can now rejig and mill you a new amount of space. So instead of spending hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars to build something that will then in 2 years need to change, you can be flexible with that. So on the infrastructure, that's that piece. We also have one of the big exciting things that was announced and really put out into the ecosystem this past week was the city of Kingston invested $3 million for capital expenses. So to have the equipment and the instruments in the building that these companies can need will need. And we offer it on a pay-per-use test, so a more accessible way for companies to access the equipment that they normally would not be able to buy themselves. So infrastructure, equipment, and then on the expertise and talent, we represent an ecosystem. We have over 100, we call them project delivery partners, so partners and organizations that we trust that we help pull the pieces together so that you get the right help at the right time.
And I'm not really in this world, so I'm kind of curious, is this like a first of its kind of project? Did you take inspiration from other things that were happening?
Yeah, so the really unique thing is the building and the facility that we're in, that we, with our main partner, Modern Niagara, who's the owner of the building, which is Canada's largest HVAC and mechanical contracting company. This building has a ton of Kingston history. It was been around since the 1940s, always with a chemistry, innovation, and manufacturing kind of lens to it. But the different spaces that we have, so the labs, piloting and scale-up facilities, all the way to areas that are zoned a factory where you can actually sell a product. Having all of those in one spot in close proximity offered in this types of flexible way makes it the first of its kind in the world at the moment, which is really exciting. You know, there are other facilities coming online in the next, you know, few years, which we are super happy about, because we focus on chemistry, but getting a facility that does something similar in biology would also be amazing. So being able to work collaboratively across the country to really improve not only Kingston, but Ontario and Canada's strength in you know, climate change and economic resilience.
Mm-hmm. And you definitely spoke to this at the beginning, but why Kingston specifically?
Yes. So really the why Kingston is this ecosystem that's present here. Having organizations that have been building over 25 years. So if we go even back further, we said DuPont started up here in the 1940s. There were other organizations that sort of came in through the generations. And then Kingston Process Metallurgy, Green Center Canada, a really strong chemistry and chemical engineering capabilities at Queen's, but also having a municipality in our city that truly wanted to invest into something innovative. Kingston was the first city to declare climate emergency a handful of years ago, and they're really taking action to actually try and solve these challenges. There's also other benefits of, which a lot of people don't know this statistic either, but Kingston has the highest per capita chemical process specialists in Canada. We are at a huge capita, but there's a ton of concentration where we can be pulling on and working with, 200 to 300 different specialists at a time, able to help with these projects. So really, Kingston has an ecosystem, it has the expertise, and it's been building what we're going to say that's a really fertile soil that's been developed and tilled over years and years and years and years, and sets up a really strong foundation to be able to help companies like this. And, we want to and are putting Kingston as sort of the center of the chemistry or chemtech, as we call it, ecosystem in Canada and really the world.
Wow. Thank you for all that background. I didn't know a lot of that.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys opened up this week. How has that energy been?
Yeah, so we've been, it's been quite a long time coming. We've been working, our team really started pushing through this in 2022 and went through, fundraising and construction and all these kind of things, and then had the facility open its doors at the end of 2024. And then now we've had our first client move in as of last month, which is what pushed us. Okay, it's time to have the official ribbon cutting and say, okay, here we are. Let's move forward. So the energy has been great. The local ecosystem is super exciting, and every person that we talk to is always willing to help in one way or another. But also, my business partner and I just came back from a 2-week trip to India, where a state government in India invited us to come to speak about the reaction of model, with the wanting to collaborate specifically because this is something so novel unique in the ecosystem, that they said, okay, well, how do we do something like that? We want to work together and learn. So not only locally, but globally, Kingston is getting attention for doing something really unique. And I feel so lucky to get to work on that every day.
Awesome. And what kind of partners are already, involved in the hub?
Yeah. So we have an ecosystem of, as we said, kind of supporters. So when you think about the stakeholders that are required to bring a technology to market, there's working with academic institutions, but also with, business development. So this is your lawyers and your IP specialists and the technical experts, but also government and other kind of investors. But specifically, we split up our closest partners into something called alliances. So we either have technology development alliances, which is where we look at who are the experts that are really needed to make sure that the science and the engineering is right. So we work with KPM, with another organization called Lidium Engineering, of course, have great relationships with Queen's and others, into the business development alliances, which is where we do all of our consulting services in alliance with Deloitte. So we're able to really access big amounts of data and expertise, and also a law firm called Dentons. And then into what we call technology adoption alliances. So we're able to develop technology, we're able to build the business around it, and then we help them actually get out into the world. And the one I wanted to really highlight is with Utilities Kingston, which also another story of what makes Kingston so awesome, is Utilities Kingston is the, kind of organization umbrella that has everything from our city's wastewater, IoT, grid, and they have all these assets, and they're the ones that operate them. So they've built an alliance with us where we are to identify and kind of validate new technologies and then connect them with their team and build out projects to be able to actually test and deploy these technologies on Utilities Kingston's infrastructure. So imagining that, you know, within a year, we could have a new water technology testing on a wastewater treatment plant, which is really fascinating. And we're it's a really cool offering that we're able to bring to our companies. And then really quickly, what I wanted to highlight is the first two companies that are operating in the building. So one, our first client, Undo Carbon, a great, they're a X Prize winning carbon removal company using enhanced rock weathering. So they're from the UK, moved to Kingston to set up a Canadian operations because they were, you have a partnership with a wollastonite mine north of the city. They have been doing amazing work in the carbon removal space, have, you know, a contract with Microsoft for their carbon credits. They're just doing great, a wonderful team. So they're in our facility to do their processing and all of their kind of quality analysis testing. And then the second is a company called Carbon Lock Technologies that's based out of the Western Canada that we're doing a pilot project to take a bio oil that they're able to create to turn it into a bitumen, so fossil fuel replacement in asphalt. So how do we create a more sustainable road infrastructure? So everything is, how do we make these changes to just, you know, get the things that we need to live our daily lives a little bit greener?
Well, a strong start is an understatement. But what are you hoping for the future of the hub? What do you see in the next few years?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of really exciting opportunities. Not only the different companies that we are seeing becoming interested and the different technology types, like creating the new batteries and new recycling technologies for other materials. So the actual seeing the breadth of companies that can be supported. But I think what I'm the most excited about is being able to create a system that's a little bit friendlier and a little bit more efficient. So when I was a founder, it's really challenging. As we said, it can be lonely. There are so many, you know, challenges or road bumps along the way. So now being able to create a system where you have infrastructure, you have the expertise when you need it, you have a ecosystem of organizations and former entrepreneurs that want to help. So really what I'm excited about for Reaction Hub is to have that place where people go, oh, I want to go there, one, because I get the best help, but also because I feel welcome and I feel supported, and being able to take that not just to support Canada, but to support the world, solve the many climate challenges that we have.
That was Morgan Lettinen, Executive Director of the Reaction Hub, Canada's newest center for green chemistry innovation right here in Kingston. With the city's investment and decades of chemical expertise behind it, the hub aims to turn Kingston into a national leader in sustainable tech and green industry. As Morgan mentioned, Kingston's innovation model is already gaining attention abroad, and the team hopes to make the Reaction Hub a blueprint for sustainable chemistry around the world. Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today, featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, October 29th, another 11-degree day here in the city of Kingston. That same 2-degree overnight low, mostly cloudy conditions in the forecast. Thursday, October 30th, daytime high of 10 degrees with an overnight low of 6, mostly cloudy conditions. Friday, October 31st, Halloween, 61% chance of precipitation in the morning and afternoon, should clear up for trick-or-treating in the evening. Daytime high of 10 degrees, overnight low of 6, so bundle up if you're heading out with the little ones on the 31st. Saturday, November 1st, daytime high of 10, mostly sunny conditions. Sunday, November 2nd, daytime high of 10, mostly rainy conditions, 55% chance of precipitation. And then moving into the start of the first full week of November, Monday, November 3rd, daytime high of 11, overcast with rainy conditions, overnight low of 4 degrees. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We begin with a quick reminder from Public Services and Procurement Canada that the LaSalle Causeway will be closed on Sunday, November 2nd from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. That is closed to all pedestrian and vehicle traffic. In terms of road closures, Aberdeen Street William II Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street Princess and Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Berry Street Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Brass Point Bridge is closed October 29th and 30th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. each day for the replacement of bridge deck planks. Motorists are asked to plan their travel accordingly and to exercise caution in the area. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Kings Court Ave, concession to First Ave, is closed until November 21st for gas main installation. Ontario Street at Lower Union is closed October 27th at 8 p.m. to October 28th at 4 a.m. for the installation of commemorative crosswalks. Ontario Street at Lower Union is also closed October 29th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. for the unveiling of commemorative crosswalks. Queen Street, King to Ontario, is closed October 28th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. to complete asphalt restoration. Wellborn Avenue, Chelsea to Everett, is closed October 31st from 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. for the Wicked Wellborn Block Party. And Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bayridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Ave, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Ave. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper, expect delays while a contractor completes construction of new sidewalk and road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Taylor Kidd Boulevard, Collins Bay to Coronation, expect delays beginning October 30th at 7 a.m. to November 7th at 7 p.m. for the replacement of two culverts. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. At their last meeting, City Council debated a motion that could see the designation of playgrounds as child safety zones. The motion, brought forward by Councillor Connie Glenn, asked staff to look at potential amendments to the city's parks bylaw and community standards bylaw to create child safety zones or sensitive use zones within 50 meters of public playgrounds, schools, daycares, splash pads, and organized children's sports fields. These zones would prohibit the erection of temporary shelters, the possession or use of drug consumption paraphernalia, and open-air drug use in those areas.
Bringing this motion was something that took me a while to come around to, and it's in response to what have been real concerns over the last 3 years, particularly from parents about drug paraphernalia in parks and playgrounds. But I also have brought this in response to what's an ongoing crisis that we don't really talk about in the same way anymore. We talk about vulnerable persons, but what we're not talking about is that we have an ongoing drug crisis. We have an opioid crisis. And we need to be considering that our community and our environment has changed drastically. What we're seeing are things in playgrounds that children don't understand. And even the smallest exposures can be toxic and life-threatening to children. So small amounts left on paraphernalia can have a huge health impact on children, long-lasting. And we've seen cases of this in other municipalities. There were reports in Ottawa, a two-year-old who actually was found with a needle in their mouth. I want to quote from actually the AMO report in 2024 on this situation in our cities, and that the pathway forward on the opioid crisis cannot be a debate between public safety and public health. It must be a balanced approach. There is no healthy community that isn't also safe. And there is no safe community where people aren't also healthy. So this is about striking a balance, about recognizing that children truly are among the most vulnerable in our society, and that even despite our best efforts to monitor parks, we are creating a situation where parents are afraid and concerned. And we are duty-bound to represent all of our constituents, the smallest to those in the most difficulty. And this creates a clear understanding of the expectations. So I hope you see this as a motion that is about harm reduction for children, about clear boundaries for everyone in the community.
Currently, the Parks and Community Standards bylaws regulate activities in public spaces to a certain degree. But this motion looks to expand upon that. For example, the Community Standards bylaw as it stands prohibits drug paraphernalia within 15 meters of a playground, but there are no broader safe zone designations. Glenn pointed to other Ontario municipalities, including St. Catharines, Sarnia, and Greater Napanee, that have introduced similar public space regulations. However, the motion drew concern from local residents and councillors alike. Kingston resident Christine Bedard spoke before council against adding new bylaw provisions.
I'd like you to indulge me for a moment and imagine my grandchildren running across the park, laughing as they chase each other, climbing on the playgrounds, playing with the equipment and or skipping along a trail. I watch them closely because I want them to be safe. But I also know that sometimes, even when we're careful, children sometimes stumble and fall. When that happens, I want them to be met with care and support, not punishment. That same compassion should extend to everyone in our city. What helped me was compassion, not fines or exclusion zones. What helped me was people who saw my worth and lifted me up. Criminalizing homelessness doesn't create safety. It drives people further into isolation and despair. I want to live in a city where compassion, support, inclusion guide our actions, where every person is given a chance to rise even after they've fallen.
Councillors also noted several practical and legal challenges. City staff detailed how fines often fail to deter behavior if people are unwilling or unable to pay them. Bylaw enforcement and Kingston Police have also both faced resource limitations, and following through consistently on such measures would be difficult. But the biggest obstacle came from a 2023 Ontario Superior Court decision. The ruling in the Bell Park encampment case found Kingston's bylaw banning overnight sheltering unconstitutional, violating the charter rights of unhoused residents. Council's legal team warned that any new restrictions concerning people sheltering in public spaces could conflict with the existing court orders from Justice Ian Carter or trigger a new charter challenge. For this reason, Councillors Ridge and Brandon Tozo, among others, could not support the motion.
There is a significant problem when it comes to drug paraphernalia being left at children's playgrounds. Something that I deal with all the time. I was talking to a dad who found 4 crack pipes at Friendship Park last week. As you can imagine, he was very happy about that when he was taking his children out. I feel that there's a lot of potential legal risk with moving forward with this motion as it currently exists. I do want to finish by saying that I really respect the intention of the mover and the seconder. I have these difficult conversations with parents all the time. And I do think that one of the many things that are required for this is additional accountability. But I question that it's within our ability as a municipality to provide that.
When we got that ruling from the court, it basically said that charter protections allow people to shelter overnight in public parks, and that is protected, and the city has followed those charter-related protections. I want to also highlight the fact I went to Third Avenue Park this weekend with my 2 kids, and there was an encampment about 30 meters away from, well, 10 meters away from Third Avenue Park. So I live this. This is in my district. I live this every day. I get where this is coming from. I just think we're opening ourselves up to a very significant charter challenge based on the reading of this motion, based on not allowing encampments overnight in public parks. I get where the community is at. I get wanting to protect kids, but I can't open up the city to liability. I don't think that's in our broader public interest as council. Because of that reasoning, I cannot support this motion. Thank you.
Still, some counselors, including Counselor Jeff McLaren, who seconded the motion, and Counselor Gary Osterhoff, felt the concept deserved further consideration.
Let's hear, get all the facts. We're not making a decision on the bylaw at this point. City staff will come back with a plan and a recommendation. That recommendation might be, let's not do this. But if we don't get all the information, then we are guessing based on presumptions that that may not be true.
I think we have an obligation when it comes to child safety. I think that this, I'm going to thank the mover and the seconder for framing it this way, which gives us opportunity to look at it and to bring light to it and to put best practices together. I think that's good governance, and we ought to support this.
After nearly an hour of discussion, Councillor Connie Glenn amended her motion, hoping to give staff more flexibility to bring back recommendations.
You know, we're not at the stage of contemplating a bylaw, but I do think that we need to move forward with giving consideration for what we're going to do in this very changed world that we're living in. And I don't think that this is out of order. Other municipalities are moving this direction because we aren't making headway.
But some councillors were still not convinced. Councillors Ryan Boehm and Tozo suggested she withdraw it and return later with a revised version.
We've heard all the concerns. We've looked at them. We've heard the concerns from legal. We're now trying to fix this on the floor, sort of at the last minute. But that's not the right way to go about this. So I'm not going to support the amendment. I'm not going to support the motion as it stands unamended either. My advice to the mover would be to withdraw it at this time, to go back to speak with legal, and to come up with a better plan to move this forward. Because I think everybody around this table understands what you're trying to do, but the approach here has not been the right way to do it. And we are going to end up with a can of worms and a whole bunch of unintended consequences, which I don't think anybody wants.
I just want to echo Councillor Boehm. I think that the intent behind this, I think there's good stuff here. I think it would be just worthwhile to withdraw this motion and come back with something that, after speaking to legal and bylaw and police, and do a little bit more work on that regard. I'm not going to support this as it is, and I'm not going to support the motion.
Mayor Brian Patterson also urged Glenn to withdraw the motion and take more time to find middle ground.
I actually want to thank you for tackling this issue. It's a very sensitive, it's a very challenging, very difficult issue. You make reference to the fact that there are other communities across the province that have tried to do this, right? And institute a public spaces bylaw of some kind to regulate sensitive uses. I actually think that there's real value in that. So I don't necessarily share some of the concerns around the table. If you feel that this is something that you would like to go forward as current side, I think the concerns that I have would probably hold me back, but I'm hoping that regardless of what happens tonight, that we continue to work on this. Again, there's no perfect solution to this, but I do get what you're trying to do, and I think there's value to it. So I'm just going to say that, but just, again, just expressing those certain concerns, perhaps a motion to defer might be a good way to kind of explore some common grounds.
In the end, Councillor Glenn withdrew the motion, acknowledging council's concerns.
So I had hoped that we could move this forward this evening, but given the overwhelming concerns coming forward and understanding that if I proceed right now, the situation that we're going to be in is that I can't bring this and none of us can bring this again for a year. So I think that that's unfair, because really what we're doing here is we're going to go ahead and get all of that advice, and it would be brought to us. So I will withdraw the motion.
However, she did give notice that she intends to bring back a revised version in the near future, one that could balance community safety and legal obligations more effectively. Kingston's own John Wright has been recognized with the 2025 Lifetime Achievement Award from the Tourism Industry Association of Ontario, honoring a career that shaped not only Kingston's tourism and entertainment scene, but the province's. The award was presented on Tuesday at the Ontario Tourism Summit in Ottawa. Wright's career began in Kingston's radio scene more than four decades ago, where he built Eastern Ontario's top stations. His work later expanded to the acquisition and development of Kingston's Thousand Islands Cruises and Kingston Trolley Tours. Alongside many other landmarks in the city, Wright also developed the waterfront Confederation Place Hotel and led the charge on major downtown revitalization projects. including the push for downtown's large venue entertainment center, now known as Slush Puppy Place. His longtime colleague Hugh McKenzie, who worked with John and Kim Wright for over 3 decades, says John's impact has always come down to his leadership style.
He inspired, he mentored me, he always sort of put the ball back to me and say, well, how would we do this? What do you want to do here? And that type of stuff. He was amazing at building good leaders. Put the ball in the hands of aspiring young talent. But again, behind the scenes, he was always supportive, bringing on ideas, bringing on challenges, and then letting the talent that we were developing, he's always investing in mentoring and developing talent, and this is how he's able to influence so many things across the community.
McKenzie says Wright's influence extends well beyond the businesses he's built.
John's one of those really important behind-the-scenes players. He plants seeds and then works with the talent to inspire people to collaborate, not just within the organization, but across the community.
I was wondering if you could kind of speak to what you think it is that makes John stand out so much in this industry.
Vision, mentorship, and leadership. John always told me, what's good for Kingston is good for our enterprise, whether it was the Boat Line or K-Rock. So Kingston outperforms almost on every metric in tourism, certainly across the province and not across the country. And that's why John's influence has been so impactful.
And while Wright may not have sought the spotlight himself, McKenzie says this award cements his legacy.
Well, I think it's brought his name to the fore in a way, as I discussed earlier, he would never have aspired to. So when we look at the how well his enterprises have done, we think of who was at the forefront. You know, is it Hugh McKenzie? Is it Glenn Williams? Is it Eric Ferguson? But it's that element of, no, now we see John Touchstone on so many aspects of Kingston and the province and things that are at a national level in terms of comparative performance. We know that it would not have happened without John.
With his work connecting Kingston by airwaves, water, and trolley lines, Wright has charted a course for Kingston's tourism and culture unlike any other. Before we wrap up this morning, it's time for your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events happening around Kingston this weekend. Tonight, Halloween night, Friday, October 31st, Limestone City Burlesque brings the Full Moon Masquerade to the Spire at 8 p.m. And for live music, the Mansion hosts a big Halloween lineup with Green Wing, The Clay Pigeons, Naked by Nine, Dutch Baby, and Jinx at 9 p.m. Or catch Rocket Surgery at the Toucan starting at 10:30 p.m. Tomorrow on Saturday, November 1st, the Kingston Public Market runs from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. in Springer Market Square. At the Grand Theater, it's Radio Rush, the moving picture story at 7:30 p.m. Something in the Water hosts a queer Halloween costume party at 9 p.m. And music fans can check out Crywank at the Broom Factory at 7:30 or SOS the ABBA Experience at the Spire also at 7:30. Sunday, November 2nd, the Memorial Center Farmers Market runs from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Kingston Native Center and Language Nest hosts the 10th Annual Community Celebration of Life from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. For families, Pinkalicious, the musical, hits the Grand at 2:30 p.m. And if you're looking for music, Magic of Wind and Brass performs at the Spire at 2:30 p.m. For more concerts, community listings, and live events, visit the full events calendar anytime at cfrc.ca. Have an event or concert you'd like to add to our online and on-air calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca. And don't forget to follow CFRC on Instagram at cfrcmusic. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and supported by our friends at Modern City Taxi, we're pleased to present Nocturnica's newest single, Demon, a song that explores how love can change you and how, in its early stages, you might not quite act like yourself. It's about the twist that comes with passion and the wild things it makes you do. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Demon by Nocturnica on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Remember when I
coming up now on this week's Release Radar. In partnership with the Kingston Music Office and supported by your friends at Modern City Taxi, we're pleased to present Nyson's newest single, Tsunami, a dreamy, catchy funk pop song with hypnotic R&B textures that take you over like a wave, making it an engaging and relaxing listen. Follow Nyson the Band on Instagram for the latest news and local show dates. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Tsunami by Nyson on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
When you crashed in, and thank God it's you there. I want you all over me immediately. Can't help my obsession, you're fascinating, and I'm drowning in it. There's no such thing as coincidence at night. This intervention must be divine. Perfect stranger these days to myself. I needed destruction to rebuild. You're the natural disaster I never knew I needed. Yeah. There's no such thing as coincidence in the night. This intervention must be divine. You introduced me to my.
Making the long trek to Windsor to battle the Lancers for a shot at the Yates Cup. These two teams last met on homecoming, where Windsor stole a victory on a last-second field goal. Can Queens avenge their homecoming loss, or will they suffer another agonizing semifinal stumble? Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM to find out. We go live at 12:45 with the Grad Club pregame show and the scheduled 1 p.m. kickoff.
Did you know about Canadian guidelines for standard alcoholic beverages? The standard drink contains 17.05 millimeters of pure alcohol. That's the equivalent of one 12-ounce bottle of 5% beer, one 12-ounce bottle of 5% cider, one 5-ounce glass of 12% wine, or 1.5-ounce shot of 40% liquor. Learn more about standard drinks and low-risk alcohol drinking guidelines at canada.ca.
Good afternoon. My name is Bruce Swan. I graduated in Commerce 72. And I'm back after 53 years of being away from Queens. And I'm listening to CFRC. And when I was at Queens, I listened to CFRC. And so I'm glad to be here.